You're listening to the Poetry of Impact podcast, sharing untold stories at the intersection of wealth, wisdom, and well-being with your host, Gino Borges.
As a kid growing up in a small town, I vividly remember our local newspaper. It would sit on our kitchen table, and throughout the day, the whole family would pick up on different sections to read. I was especially interested in the sports section. My dad and I would talk about all the team stats. Actually, I think that's where my interest in finance first germinated, making sense of the world through numbers. But now as an adult, I'm actually much more likely to be caught up on what's happening thousands of miles away from me, on other continents, in fact, than what's happening in the city council meetings in my own backyard here in Reno, Nevada. And I'm not alone in feeling this local disconnect when it comes to news. On this episode of the podcast, I had a chance to talk with Cameron Williams and Zach Richner. Cameron is a fifth-generation owner and the chief revenue officer for Ogden Newspapers and The Nutting Company, a diversified media and entertainment company. Zach is the founder and managing partner of Arendelle Ventures, a media for equity venture capital firm that works with thousands of local media outlets across the United States. They shared some insightful data around the disappearance of local newspapers in the United States, not just the stats themselves, but also the reason for the decline in local journalism, and even some eye-opening consequences that communities face when they lose their local newspapers. But lest you think it was all doom and gloom, the majority of our conversation was about innovative solutions. While Cameron and Zach both grew up in the newspaper business, they're still bringing fresh perspectives to the industry. It was encouraging to hear their optimism as they shared their current initiatives supporting local journalism through a combination of out-of-the-box business ideas, philanthropy, and even political action. If you care about the quality of journalism and feeling connected to what's going on in your local community, you'll really enjoy this conversation. Thanks to Nexus Global for their partnership with this podcast. Drop in and enjoy the talk with Cameron Williams and Zach Richner. Hi, Cameron and Zach. So good to have you guys here today. And you guys came so highly recommended from David Dietz at Nexus, and who calls you guys kind of media superstars for Next Gen. He didn't say that. I kind of did. But it was kind of implied in his write-up about you guys when he suggested, he goes, hey, Gina, you should really talk to Cameron and Zach. They're really pioneering a lot of what their family has done and are doing some real interesting things in the space, being very disruptive in places that they feel is necessary and so forth. So looking forward to the conversation with you guys. And what's really interesting, I know we were just talking offline about this whole notion of local newspapers and local journalism. And as a kid, I totally remember when that local newspaper was tossed on our front lawn and my parents always had it on the kitchen table. And it was actually a point of reference. It was always on the table and it was always sprawled out and you can see the different sections. And throughout the whole day, the whole family was kind of picking at it during lunch or if somebody was getting a snack, it was there. I liked the sports section during a certain time of life, so it had all the local sports. And what's interesting about it, now looking back, it was all about local stuff. Now when I go pick up my Reno Gazette newspaper, which is about a much bigger town and city, about 350,000 people, the small town I grew up in was Tracy, California. I'm sure you guys probably know the owners, or it was the McClatchy family that owned a lot of newspapers throughout California. I think the Sacramento Bee and the Stockton Record. But I'm now, when I open, I don't even read the Reno Gazette. You know why? Because all they're doing is running like AP Wire articles. And it's the same thing I'm almost reading on the New York Times with my New York Times subscription. The only local stuff is like local football. And then they'll have like one journalist or two local journalists that will have a couple spot articles about something clearly that's uniquely unique about City Hall. There's a, you know, be a, like definitely a political reporter, which I think is really valuable. My question is, and I have my ideas, but like, what happened? Like, how did it just get so neutered of local intimacy where, frankly, I don't know what the hell's going on in my neighborhood. I don't even know where to get that kind of information. And that's relevant. But if you ask me what's happening in Gaza, well, there's 1,000 different nuances about what's happening in Gaza. But frankly, I have no agency in Gaza. I mean, if I really want to be honest with myself, or a microscope, but I can do a lot locally, but I wouldn't even know where to really drop in. So, I mean, take me on kind of an arc on
from your guys' family angles and where you guys came from and how we got to this point.
Yeah, I mean, I'll jump in on that one. I believe most local papers, local editors, local reporters want to be doing a hyper-local product. Like, people go into local news because they love the place that they live, or they love telling local stories, which is really amazing. But the resources that are available to these papers are just a fraction of what they used to be. It was such a strong business model. It was making money from advertisers in the community. It was making money from subscribers in the community. And between those two sources of revenue, they had the resources to employ more than enough people to cover a local community and really tell the stories. And in the last 20 years, like, that has just gone away. The business model has just fallen apart. And it's really hard because I don't think it's because people don't care about local news. I don't think it's because the reporters and editors don't think it's important. I think the readers and the editors and all the people involved wish they could be doing more, but it's become a crisis of resources. And that's what we've seen almost everywhere. And I will say there are still a lot of really great local news outlets out there, especially in really small communities where they're the only source of news. We run into really great local dailies and weeklies all the time. So it's a have and have not situation. I mean, there are communities that really still have this, and then there are places that we'll probably talk about news deserts later, but places where it just has gone away. And that's what I see as a real problem.
Just to add on to what Cameron said, and I agree with all of that, is there's so much more competition for people's attention. Like, we are not just competing right now with other news outlets. We're competing with Peloton and Hulu. And I mean, it's not just in the media world. So as it's become easier to go to market with other forms of entertainment, it's really, I would say, distracted people from sometimes paying attention to what's going on in their local community. But at the end of the day, Gino, like you said, people care still about what goes on in their local community. And what's so special about the local newspapers that Cameron and I advocate for is that we are really the only ones covering that high school football game or the village board meeting or investigating the corruption of the elected official. Whereas you can go to a more regional site or a national site, and it's just one of a million places to find out what the New York Yankees did or what's going on with Princess Kate. I mean, you know, our bread and butter really is that local story that you can't get anywhere else, and where you'll read it, and more likely than not, you'll recognize the name of the person in that story.
So, as I mentioned to you guys, I'm an investment fund manager, and I grew up reading a lot of like Warren Buffett newsletters, and he always talked about one of his greatest purchases many years ago is buying the Washington Post from Katharine Graham. And he talked about he loved the moat, you know, of like, I mean, you guys had it all, at one point, like, everybody who wanted to do business had to run the classified ad or had to run the advertisement through the newspaper. And there wasn't room in a community for two newspapers kind of thing. It basically was kind of a monopoly. So from a business perspective, he loved that. But I want to challenge you guys on a couple things. One is like, how do you guys make the distinction between journalism and entertainment? When does one begin and when does one end? And why is journalism per se really important? Because I'm getting the impression that it's like, hey, look, there's a role for like us being public citizens and like for us to live a civil society. To me, I think you guys have a much bigger case than just like local football. It's like there's a more of an like, we need to be educated citizens against the potential tyranny of those who want to potentially suppress, you know, corruption and that kind of stuff. So take me into that corridor of like, no, I don't want another bullshit reality show. It's like, I want to give people the juice that fulfills and fills their life force up. Like, I am here and I am going to defend the right of my livelihood and my family because this is the way I want to live in the world. I want to live in collaboration. I want to live with justice and so forth.
I'll start with saying that I think a lot of times it's tough to differentiate between entertainment and real journalism. I think it's much easier to do so at the local level because, Gino, like you said, I think you used an example of agency you have in Gaza. Like, you know what's bullshit in your own community. It's really easy to like say, well, that story doesn't make sense. Like, I saw with my own two eyes what happened at the polls. But at a national level, it's harder because you don't have eyes on everything. It's impossible. And that's why I think brands matter, and having trusted news brands is important. And I think that's been called into question a lot over the last couple of years on both sides of the aisle. But when you look at local news, what's really awesome about what we do is it's pretty nonpartisan. You don't have a lot of Democrats saying, oh, that local newspaper is a Republican rag, or vice versa. And I'm sure we'll talk more about some of the public policy that Cameron and I have worked on. But one of the larger pieces of legislation we've worked on is a bill called the Community News and Small Business Support Act. And it has co-sponsors from both Democrats and Republicans, exactly 50-50. I think it's like 30 Democrats and 30 Republicans. I should have checked beforehand, but it's growing every day. And, you know, I think that if we were talking about national media and, hey, like, let's try to support Fox News or MSNBC, you would not see that sort of bipartisanship at all. No chance. So differentiating between national media and local media, I think, is very important, because they are not the same thing. National media can become much more easily entertainment, and it's really hard, thankfully, to fall into that trap at the local level.
Yeah, I would take maybe a slightly different tact on this. I agree with everything Zach is saying, but I also think that the great thing about local newspapers historically is that they have been entertaining for people. Not that they're entertainment or that they don't have journalistic standards, but we talk about it internally as like, you got to give people their vegetables along with the dessert that they want, right? So you give them a package that contains all kinds of things that they're interested in, which is sort of like community information, gossip, like who died in your town, obituaries, puzzles, comics. Like, there was a whole package of stuff, a lot of which people found entertaining or that a kid might want to pick up in the morning. And it was right there on the page next to what happened at city council last night. And so there's always been a goal, at least the way I was taught how local news works and the way it works best, to give the people a little bit of what they want, you know, give people some fun stuff. Like, if it's all dry and there are no pictures, like, people aren't maybe going to pick it up. And so they're never going to read the important story. And so I think mixing those two things in a balanced way and having editors that understand both and understand that it's important to keep your readers engaged is just incredibly valuable. And I think that local editors and journalists have done that really well for a long time without ever getting into what we've seen on a national scale with national media, as Zach said, but also just whether it's reality television or just like trash media and trash entertainment. Local newspapers were able to entertain people for a really long time without ever getting into that realm of sort of nonsense. So I think there's a responsible way to do it. And I hope people think that our papers are entertaining and then they learn a little bit on the way.
So Zach, I want to flash back to something you said about this idea that at a local level, you can call somebody's bullshit out because you, like you said, I'm walking around. I can see if the local park, they say it's been trashed, I can walk down there and see if it's been trashed. Or if it's been beautified, I can go down there and see if it's been beautified. I think you're onto something big time, because the national news or national media platforms have done such a great job of what I refer to as non-referential. Like, there is no referent anymore. It's like multiple degrees removed from an actual referent. And there's a certain neuroses and paranoia that happens within the masses, in my opinion, the further you get away from the source.
Yeah.
Because there's an element of relativism that most people just cannot calibrate from an evolutionary perspective, cannot calibrate all of these relative images and narratives coming at them. And so the further away, you're right. If I go on and listen to a platform that is a non-Western platform, let's say a platform that's in Turkey, for instance, that's running news of what's happening in the Middle East, those people are receiving completely different context and a completely different narrative. And I'm not so much about getting into like what's real in as much as why, because I think that that's a foolhardy task at some level, because I do think that there's a certain amount of perspectivism in all form of journalism, depending on the point of angle or, you know, the point that people are taking. But what I want to get to you guys at is, how do you make sense of like, oh, shit, I know this. This is painful. I'm in a legacy business that's dying if I continue to do it. And I'm saying, why would you guys continue to do it yourself as individuals that have to go and live on this earth as a sentient being? You guys can choose much easier existences. I wouldn't even imagine trying to prop up a local newspaper at this point. Like, to me, it's almost like I would feel defeated. But you guys are not even close to defeated. You guys both have smiley faces going on. It's like, no. So what keeps you there doing this?
I think it's very powerful when you feel like, well, if I'm not going to do this, nobody else is going to do it. Or if I'm not going to do this, the person that's going to do it instead isn't going to do it as well. And so I think that's, you know, maybe I'm elevating what I think I can do. You know, maybe I'm foolhardy in this a little bit, but I actually think that, you know, I can make a difference. And so that's a very powerful thing. And I worry a lot when I look around the local news community and I don't see a lot of other people stepping up and trying to make a difference. And I think that's where Zach and I were really drawn together in the legislative push and trying to, you know, say, hey, let's think bigger. Like, let's see if we can find a solution on a federal level, or at least some help on a federal level that can help make this happen. Because going to conferences or talking with our colleagues and just complaining that like, this is really hard. What are we going to do? Maybe we should all quit and do something easier, which is absolutely a conversation that happens all the time, was becoming unsatisfying because it felt like giving up. And it's been exciting to feel like we're not giving up. So that's why I stick with it.
Yeah, totally agree with everything Cameron said. Gino, you mentioned like, why would we do this as individuals? And you know, what keeps me excited about this is I don't see it as doing it as an individual. There's this really great group of colleagues that Cameron and I have that are dedicated and smart and fun. So we have a group of six of us that are of the same generation. We speak pretty regularly about professional issues, personal issues. We have a very active text chain, lots of memes and GIFs going on there. But we also have, beyond that, just an amazing group of people that are part of America's Newspapers and sit on the legislative committee with Cameron and I. And then there's other organizations that are doing fantastic work as well. So there are a lot of people in this fight with us, and it is a fight because the market forces and political forces are not always at your back. But I like the challenge. Like, if it's easy, like, that's not fun. There's definitely a lot of self-confidence that Cameron and I both have in our ability to overcome some of these challenges. And I think we'll be successful. But even if we're not, I know that we will have moved the industry to a better place. But I'm pretty confident we're going to figure this out.
And follow, like, I mean, what makes you feel confident? Like, what are you seeing? At some point, you have to see something that makes you feel confident, right?
I think that there's a real opportunity to rethink the business model in local news. I'm of the opinion that there has never been innovation on the business side of our industry. And I know that there's be pushback on that statement and say, well, what about paywalls or membership models? And my response is, well, that's just a subscription that you've always had, just kind of adapted to the digital world. That's not a new business model. And people love reading about themselves. They love talking about themselves. They love reading about people they know, their neighbors, things that personally impact them and their families. So these local news outlets have amazing audiences and incredibly loyal audiences. And I mean, shame on us if we can't find a way to monetize such a loyal and vast and dedicated audience. So I'm very confident that there's a way to make this a successful business like it was a decade or two ago. When everyone's running towards something, it's not always great to be running with the crowd either. Sometimes running in the opposite direction can pay off.
Yeah. And just specifically in the last couple of years, there's been so much more energy around the idea that like this is an existential crisis, not just in the industry. I mean, I think people on the outside are starting to realize, just like you talked about, Gino, like it doesn't feel good to live in a place and not be connected. And now that we face 30 years of the industry shrinking, but you're actually seeing closures and you're seeing sort of that next level of decay in local news, a much broader audience of people are waking up to the idea that this is a huge problem. And that combined with concerns over what's real and not real on the internet, you know, what's real? What's real information? Like what's true? And all the anxiety over the impact of social media. You have all that coming together. And I think that that all works for us. I mean, I think that all points back to people seeking connection and community, which has been proven over and over again to be a great place to build businesses. That's why social media has been so successful. It's a place for people to come together. We have to be able to tap into that. I mean, on a local level, we're one of the best positioned organizations to be that connective force in our communities. That's a great place to build a business. And we have a legacy brand and legacy connections that nobody else has. There's no way, in my opinion, that an outside company could come into Weirton, West Virginia and build what we could build there. There's just no way. And so that's a unique advantage. You know, there are still 6,000 local community newspapers around the country. That's a ton. And other local media outlets, you know, I'm in newspapers, but there are a lot of other local media outlets doing a great job that are not explicitly newspapers. And they have a unique advantage to build community. And I think that's powerful. And like Zach said, like, shame on us if we can't figure that out.
And Cameron mentioned that there are lots of great local news outlets out there besides newspapers. And obviously, Cameron and I know newspapers best because that's kind of how we grew up in those businesses. But I want to be very clear that we are not trying to like hold on to the past here with newspapers. Do I think newspapers are going to be part of the solution? Yeah, I do. But I don't know if that means it's going to be on a printed piece of paper. I will say, though, that even today, if you are featured in the local print newspaper, you cut that out and you send it around to your family and you hang it on your fridge. You don't do that when, you know, you get an Instagram tag of yourself. So there is something special about that permanency of print, but I firmly believe that we don't know what the delivery mechanism of local news will look like in 10 years. Like it might be print, it might be audio like this podcast, it might be a technology that doesn't even exist yet. What I am most focused on is making sure that we have good local journalists and a business model that can support them so that that information, that news, in some cases, that local entertainment can get out into the community.
So Cameron, you mentioned like the small town in West Virginia where the brand of the newspaper has been there for a long time and it's part of the connective tissue of the community. And if the built-in need is to belong in the community and the newspaper used to kind of serve that, there'd be a value proposition for somebody that says, yeah, please subscribe me. There's a lot of value in me knowing who's dying, who's selling the furniture, when the high school football team's going to be starting, what's the starting lineups, what real estate projects are being proposed, and so forth. Is the model you're talking about, Zach, a combination of devoted journalists, training journalists, and also user-generated content from a local and aggregating that to some extent? Versus having a staff of five people, you have the kind of the intimacy of a more of a collective. And obviously that has its own issues in terms of user generated. I mean, the motives may not always be terribly clear or in terms of subscribing to journalistic ethics. I guess what I'm trying to do is like, how do you guys get more boots on the ground? Because I think that that's the real interesting part is like, yeah, a town like Reno's got 250,000 people. Fair amount of educated people who are interested in this kind of thing. And yet they're all kind of sidelined for the five people that work full time for the Reno Gazette newspaper. And so therefore it comes out as a very thin rag without any of that rich shit that people are looking for that they all find in communication. Like what would be kind of a model that allows for everybody to kind of participate, incentivize them but modulate it in a way that it doesn't turn into a big, you know, family shit show for the holidays where it's just like after 2 hours, you realize like, gosh, Uncle Johnny's just sharing a bunch of bullshit with us. And it's like, okay, it sounded good for the first hour, but it kind of needs a clearinghouse. It needs an editorial element to it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to turn any of our news outlets into Nextdoor. I don't think that's good for anybody. Mm-hmm. I personally, and I have sort of strong feelings on this, I'm sure other people feel differently. I think there's a place for community generated content, but I think the most important thing in local news is having people that are dedicated employees who are doing this as their job and take it really seriously and also spend years building connections in the community and learning about the things that they're writing about. It's completely different to have somebody cover a school board meeting who's been covering school board meetings for a decade versus having somebody sort of go in and take some notes. It's just, it's not the same. Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that when I say I want newspapers to be a part of the solution, I agree with Zach that it's not about pen on paper, but it is about some of these traditions that traditional media companies understand the difference between just telling what happened and having somebody there who can provide context, can help people understand, and who can be a consistent voice on a topic in a community. So I'm not really on the community contributed content train at all. I want newspapers to have and media companies to have more resources so they can hire more people. The greatest thing I could see in our company, you know, if we double the number of employees in our newsrooms, you know, in the next decade, that would be a major reversal of the trend, right? That would be amazing. Like that would be a resource in these communities, right? We're not going to do that by snapping our fingers. You have to do that by bringing resources in. So I think it's a resource game, not so much a like, oh, where can we go get some free content? Because
fair enough. Yeah.
You know, crap in, crap out.
Yeah. I think with the user generated side, I agree with Cameron that turning into Nextdoor is not the way to go. But what is really great about some of the technology that exists now is it's a little bit more of a discussion and a bit less prescriptive when it comes to what we are telling our communities. And they can, it's easier for them to tip us off on stories or let us know what they care about. And if we're covering stuff they care about, that means that they're going to read us more. They're also more likely to trust us because they probably have, can verify that story based on their own experiences. So it's easier to build trust if you're in some cases responding to what the community wants. But to something that Cameron said earlier, we still need to serve the community some of their vegetables. We probably are not going to get lots of users saying, please like break down the school budget for us. But that's really important to do nonetheless. So I think there's a place for user generated content and that's in like guest columns. And it's very clear that that is a community member who also might have their own biases. Like that's something to keep in mind is that when you invite the general public into journalism, it's really hard to know what some of their biases are. And hopefully we operate as a news organization in a way where we are able to kind of put those biases off to the side. Everyone has biases. You are never going to have no bias. Like it's impossible. But hopefully you are professional enough to be aware of those biases and navigate around them to the best of your ability.
So what do your families think of what you guys are doing? Like, I mean, you guys both come from kind of legacy publishing newspaper families, and obviously there's a certain amount of inertia and belief patterns that just naturally come together and a lot of different vested interest after multiple generations participate in something. Curious on how it all stacks up for when like you take these conversations and interest initiatives back and say, I want to do this and we're going to do it. Take me through that process a little bit.
My family thinks I'm insane to do this because they think it's challenging, not because they don't think it's important. But like I said, I love the challenge and it is super important. And at the end of the day, I think they're very proud and happy that I'm not scared by this challenge. I mean, they've seen the difference it's made in so many people's lives, not just covering stories, but also the people we employ. We employ over 100 people in small communities in New York. That's, you know, a whole family's livelihood that relies on us being able to exist. So we take that very seriously and we make our decisions, our business decisions with that in mind. And we're really proud of the fact that we have not ever laid anybody off. We are a family business ourselves. My grandparents started this company back in 1964, and we try to think of everybody as part of this big family. It's getting harder and harder to do that, just financially speaking. And that's why Cameron and I are actively working on solutions to double the number of people that we have in the newsroom, like Cameron said she would love to see happen.
You can't hold it. Yeah, that's not the point of this conversation.
So I guess the bottom line is family thinks a bit crazy, but also probably not surprised that I would take a uncommon path.
I think it's exciting for my family. And when I say my family, it probably falls into two camps. I mean, there are the members of my family that are involved in newspapers and media. And I think for them, they see that it's hard, but they understand because they're in it too, right? I mean, this is where they live. This is what they do. And in my family business, and we've been around for 133 years, you know, founded in 1890 in Wheeling, West Virginia. And we've been in legacy media, but as a family, we've also pursued other businesses that are passions and interests of other members of the family over generations. And so I think everyone who's in the business side of the family understands that you can't run something you're not passionate about. You're not going to wake up every day and do your best work if it doesn't speak to you. And so I think there's a lot of excitement that I'm passionate about it and that it keeps me going. And then there's also all the people in my family who are like, what's a newspaper and why would anybody read one of those? And I think they have a different perspective. So it's a good reminder that families, just like communities, are full of all sorts of people. But I've definitely got both camps in my group.
Yeah. How do you kind of deal with a certain amount of surrendering that it takes, right? I mean, obviously you can take all that family feedback pretty literally and all of a sudden that gets internalized and that becomes kind of a weight. But like, I mean, how do you kind of know and navigate the multiple voices of whether it's an explicit voice or clearly implicit? How do you, as an individual that's got to go sleep at night and take care of family or has a partner and just wants to be a good neighbor to, and just be a good person in the world, it requires a certain amount of letting go. And I remember Ginsburg had a great quote. Ruth Bader Ginsburg was quoted, and it was an interesting quote. She said, the key to doing really well in life is really listening well to what you need to listen to well, and not so well at those things that you really probably shouldn't be listening to. But yet that's quite the art form, especially if you get recognized as somebody that has influence, you hear a lot of stuff and people feel compelled to share a judgment or two. And so I'm really fascinated by surrender as a form of wellness and a way to take care of ourselves. And you can expand on it. I'm really interested in how you guys actually take care of yourself so that you don't get burned out, but you actually stay optimistic and you are not just optimistic, but you know, have you noticed this when like people get into that advocacy identity and like, I like the fight, they put up a hell of a fight for a while, but then at a certain point, the weight of life just kind of like beats them down because they haven't really found a way to kind of do a jiu-jitsu move and kind of move that energy past them. So I'm really moved by how folks like yourself are handling kind of the wellness equation as part of your endeavor. Or not. I mean, you may not. I mean, you may just say, you know what? No, I haven't figured this out at all. It like all hits me in the goddamn head like a wall of bricks.
Yeah. So Cameron would say that I don't have this figured out at all. But, but not to get too personal here, but about 4 years ago, I got COVID really badly. And since then, I've had long COVID. And it's really given me a amazingly new perspective on things. And it's going to sound so cliche and cheesy, but I'm just like so appreciative now that like I'm alive. I like was born in America. My family has the resources that I was able to like be out of work for a little bit. So I think appreciation is like a huge, or gratitude. And I don't know if I really had that before, or I probably thought I did, but it's a whole new level now. So yeah, having long COVID is like pretty crappy, but on the whole, I think it gave me a new ability to empathize with folks that will serve me well in life. And it might even be a net positive. Having said that, I'm still working like very hard to move our elected officials in a direction that will pay more attention to long COVID because we're not paying enough attention to it. But that's probably a story for another day, Gina.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Zach's solution has something to do with regularly scheduled naps, but you're still figuring it out. So, but I think it's a really good question for me. And I definitely don't have this totally figured out. And I find myself in cycles of more productive and less productive. But I think for me, it's gratitude is important. Also, just keeping things in perspective. So I think relationships are what keep me going, right? Relationships with people in my family, relationships with my friends, relationship with my kids. And so if I feel like those relationships are in jeopardy because I'm so tired or I'm so grouchy that I'm not showing up and I'm putting pressure on those people, then probably something needs to be adjusted. And we always said, even in my family, there's nothing that will ever come up work-wise that's important enough that like we don't all get together and have a good time at Thanksgiving. And we said that for a really long time. And we said that for 100 years. And it's been something that's really helped us as a family for a long time. And it definitely helps me because that's where I see myself showing up badly first, is like with my friends and with my family. They sort of get the brunt of it first. And so that's my signal, like, okay, time to adjust. So I think there's good perspective there that helps me just sort of back up a little bit.
So, I mean, we've touched on a lot of different things, but we've touched on nowhere near all of what comes up for you guys on your journey. I always like to give you guys the last word that came up for you, but yet probably couldn't like, that's probably not the place to bring it up, you know? And so I want to give you kind of the last opportunity to share what you need to share. It can be a very much a non sequitur at this point. I have no intention of, maybe I might connect it to something, but for the most part, I just know that there's always something stirring when I give interviews that like, oh gosh, I wish I had two more.
Yeah. Minutes. So can I talk about two things quickly?
Yeah. And it doesn't even have to be quickly. I'm just like, I just want to create some white space for you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. So the first thing is we talked a lot about the importance of local news. And in the last couple of years, there's been like actual data that shows what happens to a community when local news goes away. So for decades, it was just all like anecdotal. And now, because it's become top of mind, and I think that that probably started around the 2016 election, if I had to be honest, like that's where people started to pay more attention to fake news or the mainstream media and then local news. But there is now excellent research that shows that when a community loses its source of local news, you have higher political polarization, you have lower voter turnout and civic engagement, you have higher rates of political corruption. I mean, it's even an economic issue because the municipal cost of borrowing in these communities go up, which means that the residents are paying higher taxes. And it's also an environmental issue. Communities without local news see toxic environmental emissions increase by 30%. That's huge. And a lot of this just comes down to there not being that watchdog in the community, that objective watchdog, and also that common, I mean, it's the fabric of the community that everybody can get around and go to that local football game or that bake sale or be excited that the alumni from your local high school made it big on American Idol or something. It's that shared sense of community. So this is steeped in truth and real data, this crisis that we're experiencing. 50% of counties in America are news deserts. That means that they are down to one or in some cases zero sources of local news. And although we have 6,000 newspapers left, as Cameron mentioned, we have 3,000 newspapers less than we did in 2004. So a third of all newspapers have closed. And I think we might have mentioned this earlier. Nothing's coming in to replace them. There's this misperception that a newspaper closes and you get some sort of website. Penny Abernathy at the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern has done incredible research showing that that's not the case. The number of digital newspapers, which do fantastic work, has stayed consistent over the last two decades. And if they were stepping in to fill this vacuum, those would be increasing quite exponentially. So I did want to just mention some of the hard stats out there because they are, I think they are very important. And then I'll talk about my second thing in a little bit. But Cameron, anything you want to add there?
No, I think that's really good. I was going to mention Penny Study too. And even as media outlets that are left are wildly less resourced than they were 20 years ago, which means even if they're there, like we started this conversation, they're not able to do the work that they used to be able to do or the work that they want to do. So I think that's a real issue. And there is a lot of good hard data about the consequences. I think the other thing, and Zach, probably this leads into what you want to talk about, but the one thing we really have not touched on at all is how wildly outmatched the local media industry is when it's fighting these battles for whether it's better regulations or government support or community support or even local business support in their communities. We are literally organizations that are up against Facebook, Google, Amazon, all of the large tech platforms that are all making revenue from the businesses in the communities where we operate, who have to spend with now Facebook and Google and Yelp and all of these other tech platforms. They have to spend marketing dollars with these companies that they used to spend with us. That's part of the collapse of the ecosystem that used to support local news. And we are pitted against each other in this way because of the new, you know, business models that have formed in the last 20 years. And we're also pitted against them when we're talking about legislation and protecting local jobs and local journalism, because that is not the interest of the big tech companies. And so one of the things Zach and I have been working on is how can we even begin as an industry to put ourselves on a level playing field with these giant corporations whose interests have been proven over and over again to not be, you know, local community. The devastation of Main Street and the devastation of local news have gone together for a reason. And so we're trying to be out there on the political side of this, because all of these groups are definitely out there advocating for themselves. And as an industry, we have just not been able to break through and advocate on the same level. So I don't know, Zach, if you want to talk a little bit about just how that's coming together. Sure. But I think it's good to put in perspective that we're not just out here advocating for ourselves because we have a problem. Like, we have to, because the people that we're working against are massive, sophisticated, very challenging adversaries.
Yeah. So we definitely have an uphill battle. And you can imagine a small newspaper in, let's say, Wheeling, West Virginia, trying to negotiate with Facebook or like who to even call. It's impossible. So there's a lot of legislation right now that's active at the federal level and also in some states that would hopefully help level the playing field a bit. So the piece of legislation that Cameron and I have been most active with through America's Newspapers, which is the trade association. Cameron was the most recent president of America's Newspapers, and I sit on the board of the organization. We've really been advocating for a bill called the Community News and Small Business Support Act, formerly known as the Local Journalism Sustainability Act. And this gained a lot of momentum during COVID, where it became very clear the importance of local news to communities and also just how dire the financial situation was. Because you have to, if you can take yourself back to March of 2020, a lot of the local businesses that advertised with local newspapers and local media were out of business. Like, they didn't exist anymore. So the revenue stream for local news just dried up. However, it had never been more important for us to stay in business and communicating what's going on with, you know, school closings and curfews and vaccination sites. And our reporters, to their credit, were out in the field, like literally risking their own health for an unknown virus. And we were, as an industry, just pushing through that without really knowing where the next check was going to come from. So that was really scary. And then we just saw these massive amounts of government funds going to some very good programs and probably some not so good programs. And we started to think about, like, is there sound public policy that can be implemented that would support local news and, most importantly, support the local information ecosystems all throughout the U.S.? So we crafted a bill, which, as I mentioned, is now called the Community News and Small Business Support Act. And what that does is it provides tax credits to local news organizations for actually employing journalists. So you don't get this tax credit if you don't have journalists. It's like very clearly linked jobs to tax credit. And we think that that is going to be very helpful for the industry. There's a version of that that I've been working on in New York State called the Local Journalism Sustainability Act that has made some very good progress by the time this airs. Hopefully that'll be included in the state's fiscal year 25 budget. And then part of the federal bill is a tax credit for small businesses for advertising with local media, because Main Street is such an important part of communities, just like objective information is. And we need to do a better job as a country supporting the small business and that entrepreneur that, you know, employs one or two people, but at the end of the day really is the economic engine of these small communities. So that's some of the legislation that we've been very passionate about and we've been working hard at with a whole team of people. It's certainly not something that we're doing alone. There's amazing publishers and government affairs professionals that are working with us. And we want to take some of the small successes we've had and amplify that. And one of the ways that we're doing that is through an organization that we just announced a couple of weeks ago called Local News for America. It is a
501c4 nonprofit.
501c4.
Sorry, not a 501c3 nonprofit, a 501c4 nonprofit.
So it's a social welfare organization that is really focused on the importance of local news to communities and how we can best support that and take some of this interest that we see on the sidelines right now that wants to be helpful when it comes to local news, but doesn't know how to be helpful, and really direct that into a productive direction. So that involves education. Like, I think we have to do a much better job of educating the public about the importance of local news, why it matters for all the reasons we've just spoken about. But also 70% of America doesn't think that there's a problem with the financial health of the local news industry. So it's really hard to get people to pay attention to a problem when they don't think there's a problem. So that is very important, is that education piece. And then amplifying some of the great work that organizations like America's Newspaper is doing, making sure that people are aware of some of this legislation that's out there and why it matters. And then we're also starting a political action committee, which, Cameron, I don't know if you want to talk a bit about why we see the PAC as an essential piece of this puzzle.
Yeah, the Local News PAC, which shares a lot of DNA with Local News for America in terms of the purpose. But we've been advocating for policies that support local news and local journalism for years. And we have so many people that we've talked to that are enthusiastic about the issue that understand. I mean, it makes sense, right? Like, it's one of those issues that you talk to people and like, they're a human being and you're a human being, and they nod their head and they're like, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that'd be bad if there wasn't local news. That seems bad. You know, whether it's a staffer, a congressperson, or a senator, or whatever. But I think the hard thing that we've learned, and sort of the pill that probably idealistic Zach and Cameron of 10 years ago might have struggled with, maybe not Zach, he's always been more cynical than I was, but I think we need to play the game in a way that we get some real action and get some things done. And there's so little that happens, that so little productive policy that happens, especially on a federal level, in any sphere now, that if you're going to be one of the 40 things that gets through, or one of like the 10 priorities, you need to elevate yourself. I mean, you need to elevate yourself as a priority. And I think what we've seen is that's exactly what the tech platforms and the healthcare companies, I mean, the folks that are getting the sweeter deal, have figured out how to do that. And I've just gotten to the point where I'm not willing to sacrifice the entire local news industry on principle. I think that's insane. And I think if in 10 years we did that, we'd be looking back very, very disappointed in ourselves that we didn't throw everything at the wall. So I think that this effort, whether it's Local News for America or the Local News PAC, is about like, okay, let's ramp up the resources. Like, let's give this everything that we have, because in 3 years, there'll be half as many news outlets in local communities, nothing to replace them. And it's much, much harder to restart an ecosystem that really is gone than to try to save and preserve what's here. So I'm really energized about it. And I think it's just like, we've got to have this firing from every direction. So these are new tools in the toolbox. I'm psyched about it.
And just to like be super explicit about what we're talking about on the PAC side, it's donating money to candidates that support local news. And that's like, know that we will get some pushback on like, how can you maintain your journalistic integrity if you're giving to government officials? And I think we just have to have a little confidence in ourselves as an industry that we're adults and we can do that. And when we take advertisements from the local business or hospital, like that's never really a question that people ask. How can you continue to cover this institution or this business that is spending thousands of dollars with you? So I think that this, as Cameron said, is a very important new tool to have in our toolbox. And it allows us to really support the people that understand the importance of local news, because a lot of politicians do. It's amazing. You walk into their offices in Washington, D.C., and what do they have on the wall? They have a framed photo or a framed, you know, article from their local newspaper. So they get it. I think we just need to play with the big boys a little bit more. And it's hard to do if you're under-resourced. And by having a political action committee to support candidates that support us, and also a C4 to educate the general public about this issue, I think we're headed in the right direction. So I'd be remiss if I didn't say anyone that's interested in this should go to localnewsforamerica.com or Local News PAC and contribute to this cause. It is super important to your community, to making sure that you get real news. And we would just be honored to any support that you're able to give to us.
Co-sign.
Well, thank you. Sure. It's been very inspiring. Zach, you did mention a little bit of where people can learn more about what you just got to talk about. Are there any other platforms our listeners can learn a little bit more about what you're doing, Cameron and Zach?
Yeah, I mean, I would encourage people, if you're really curious about this issue in general and what's going on, I would encourage people to read the State of Local News Project out of Northwestern, out of Medill. I think, I mean, you can look it up, but they've been doing it for multiple years, studying what's happening in local news. I see it as really the authoritative, comprehensive look across the country of what's happening. So that's a really good place if you're just curious about this issue. And then the other thing I would encourage everybody to do, if you really want to understand this, is subscribe to your local paper if you have one. If you grew up in a small town, you don't live there now, go look it up. I bet there's a local paper where you grew up and, you know, subscribe digitally, become a digital subscriber and re-engage in what's going on in your hometown. Re-engage with what's happening. So many people I know, you know, that I went to college with and that I work with all the time, you know, live in New York, live in DC, live in Chicago. And I think it's a really profound experience to reconnect with what's going on in real America, you know, quote unquote. It's kind of a reality check. And so I think that's a healthy thing. And if you didn't grow up in a small town, you know, find some small community you have a connection to, that your cousin's in, that your mother-in-law lives in, whatever, and just check in on it once a week. You know, what's going on there? What do people care about? Like, what's happening? It will be so different from what you read in your normal information diet. And I mean, I get to do it all the time, and I find it really, really educational, but also just, I think it feels good for the brain. So I would recommend that everybody does that if they can.
Nice. Agreed. And that website for the News Desert Reports that Cameron mentioned is localnewsinitiative.northwestern.edu. So just some great resources there, some like really local maps you can check out. And then I alluded to that we're doing some work specifically in New York State on legislation. To learn more about that, you can go to savenylocalnews.com. If anyone out there is interested in setting something up similarly in their own states, would be more than happy to talk to them. So savenylocalnews.com, and then also localnewsinitiative.northwestern.edu.
Beautiful stuff. Cameron, Zach, thank you so much.
Thank you, Daniel. This was great.
Thank you.
Hey, everyone. Thanks again for listening in to today's conversation on the Poetry of Impact. The podcast exists for and because of listeners like you. Be sure to subscribe to the Poetry of Impact podcast on your favorite podcast player. And if you have time, leave us a review. Thanks again and goodbye for now. Till next time.
Thank you for listening to the Poetry of Impact podcast. For show notes and additional resources, visit poetryofimpact.com.